Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Charlene Brown. You would think 3- and 4-year-olds are so active by nature that obesity would not be a worry for this age group. But one study done jointly by Ohio State University and Temple University found 20% of 4-year-olds are obese. The Ohio Public Health Association found that 10% of preschoolers as young as 2 years old and up to 5 years old are overweight. And the numbers are even higher among African Americans and children of Mexican descent. Lack of physical activity is part of the problem. So Jackie Goodway of OSU's College of Education in the School of Physical Activity and Educational Services decided that preschool is the best time to intervene. So she joins us now along with her colleagues, Maggie Summers, who is Program Director at the OSU Child Care Program, and Dr. Laura Moad, who is an instructor at OSU in the School of Physical Activity and Educational Services. And they're here to talk about Project Skip. Thank you all for being here today.
Good morning.
Thank you, Sharon.
Good morning.
Jackie, tell us, what is Project SKIP? What does that SKIP stand for?
Well, SKIP stands for Successful Kinesthetic Instruction for Preschoolers. And the word kinesthetic is really a fancy term for motor skills. And what we're interested in doing is promoting successful motor skill activities for young children.
And when you say motor skill activities, are we talking about jumping, hopping, skipping, just general playing kinds of movement?
Well, the public would think of it as play. And in the motor development area, which is where my background is, what we see is that what we know is that children's play is made up of a group of skills called fundamental motor skills. Now, those skills are actually broken down into two groups. There's a group of skills where you manipulate objects like balls and bats and stuff like that, and that's like kicking and catching and throwing. And then there's a group of skills where you move your body, which is like running and hopping and skipping. And so we think as a public that kick kids out to play and those skills will automatically develop, and that's just not the case.
Maggie, you've seen this in your own preschool, and you're using SKIP in the OSU program, child care program?
Yes, we do. What Jackie was saying about play and the fact that people have the idea that even if they let children just get outside and play, everything will happen naturally isn't exactly true. But we really want people to get children outside to play. But some kinds of things, adults or older children with different kinds of skills, really need to play with younger children to help them build new skills and think of ideas that sometimes they don't think of on their own or be able to use equipment that they can't really use independently.
Laura, were we lagging behind somehow back in the day when people used to just send the kids out to play and turn them loose and they did things like play dodgeball, kickball, climb trees, play baseball, run, jump?
No, I think that our environment is changing. I think that more parents are working and that children have less opportunities to be active on a regular basis. And so they need a little bit more structure. And so by sending them to and a lot more children are going to preschool and daycare environments. So that's where you need to target the interventions to give them more opportunities to learn to develop those skills so that they can then be active throughout their life, you know, not just as a child, but as an adult.
And Jackie, I read that that's really the whole point of Project SKIP, is that this is laying the groundwork to give these children a lifetime of enjoying physical activity.
Absolutely. It's just like reading. In the beginning, if you don't learn your ABC, you're not able to then, you know, learn your words and ultimately be able to read and read across your lifetime. What we're finding with young children now is that they don't have the opportunities to learn their ABCs of movement. They're running, they're hopping, they're throwing, they're catching. And therefore, if they don't get that opportunity, they're not going to be active across their lifespan. Our goal in Project SKIP is to get them young, they're excited, they love doing this stuff, and we promote their development, and our goal is to get them active across their lifespan.
Talk about the long-term effects if they don't have this kind of experience, if they're either allowed to simply sit around and play quiet games in one spot or look at television, or if they're not taught these kinds of things.
Well, I think one of the differences, Laura mentioned children being in childcare at an early age. And one of the differences that we see is that children don't have the opportunity to build core muscles, to use their large muscles to do even useful kinds of things. I think about, you know, I grew up on a farm. And so I was not one of those children who was out in the neighborhood playing because we didn't have a neighborhood. Our neighbors were very far away from us. But instead, what we did was play with what we had, and we also did useful kinds of activities that young children can do now. But without those kinds of things, children aren't getting a variety of different kinds of exercise. And so their bodies are not developing in the ways that we want them to. And I think Laura can really speak to then what happens.
And what about that, Laura?
Well, we're starting to see these diseases that we have known that adults develop. Now we're seeing those diseases, those early signs of those diseases in children.
Such as?
Such as diabetes. Used to be called adult onset type 2 diabetes. We're now seeing it in children, and the implications are that we don't really know in the next 20 years the impact in this country that we are going to have for having to deal with those types of diseases. And we know what happens if someone that's 25, 35 develops diabetes and the healthcare costs and the burden on our economy, but we don't know if a child that's 5, 6, 7, we're starting to see pre-diabetes and then develop type 2 diabetes, the impact that we're going to have. So that's why we want to intervene at a very young age.
Okay, so there is a health price to be paid overall when you have children who are not engaging in these kinds of activities. I read also that there is some cognitive development that takes place when children are being active. Can one of you speak to that?
Sure. I mean, one of the things we know about the brain is when a child is born, their brain is a network. The links between their brain and their muscles and are not fully developed. And it's only through play and motor skill opportunities that those networks develop. In order for children to be able to problem solve and sort of cognitively develop, they learn by doing in the early years. And so one of the things we need to give them opportunity to do is to touch things, to pick them up, to carry them around, to understand texture. And that's what develops their sort of neural networks and their cognitive development. And so it's all these opportunities to interact with their environment and the different kinds of things that they come across.
Maggie, this is actually a program that's been around for 15 years, right? And is it being used in real school settings?
Jackie actually knows more specifically about SCIP and where it's being used, and I'll let her speak to that. But I do want to say that for young children, not everyone has access to this kind of program. And so these programs are out there, but unfortunately, they're not everywhere. Early childhood educators, folks who work in childcare centers, are typically not very well trained and educated in understanding motor development and the kinds of things they need to do. And in addition, just the economics of childcare and early education means that a lot of childcare centers don't have a lot of outdoor space, nor do they have indoor space to plan a lot of opportunities for children to use their large motor skills. And so it becomes an issue of, even though we have these kinds of programs, being able to incorporate them into our child care centers and schools is not so easy. So that's a real concern for us. But I think Jackie can talk more about
SCIP. Yeah, Jackie, what about where it is being used?
Well, one of my huge commitments is to disadvantaged children. So one of the things we know from the data is that you mentioned right at the beginning of the show that African-American and Mexican-American children have higher rates of obesity, higher rates of diabetes, higher rates of physical inactivity. What I would say to you is it's not about race or ethnicity. It's about poverty. And it's about the environment that those children live in and that the lack of opportunities they have. And so my commitment has been to Head Start. And so we're very involved with the CDC Head Start group around Columbus. We work through a couple of the Head Start centers, specifically G. Tyree Head Start Center, and we have a very strong program there. What we're trying to do is really reach out into those communities that really have the least environmental support for physical activity and motor skill development. And, we're very committed to expanding that. Right now, I just received a National Institute of Health $270,000 grant to be able to expand my program a little bit. And Laura and I just applied for what's called Challenge Grants. So it was millions of dollars in money. And we applied for some money to be able to expand that program to all of the centers in that system.
What about the how does this work when you're in a school? What is it that you have the children do when they're doing Project Skip? It sounds like the children are skipping and hopping and jumping.
What we're trying to do is generally the children will come to us twice a week for about 30 minutes. And we've embedded it into what's called a service learning motor development class. And that means our undergraduate students get some experience off campus working with young children. And that is fabulous for everybody. It's win-win for the young children to see college-age students. And it's great for college-age students to get off the ivory tower of campus and go out into our neighborhoods and make a difference. And what we do is we work on fundamental motor skills. So they come in and we might put up a Barney big poster and we'll throw yarn balls at Barney. We quite often use creative themes because young children are really creative. Shannon Titus, who's one of my graduate students who just ran a two-week program with Maggie this summer, I think she had a July 4th theme. She had a beach day. And so we'll utilize their imagination, and we'll build in our kicking and our throwing and our catching and our running in really creative ways to begin to develop those skills.
That works within the setting that you're using Project Skip. But, Laura, maybe you can talk about some of the factors that work against that type of activity when the children are at home.
Well, one, I do want to add that part of our intervention is looking at the difference between those students that don't receive any intervention, so just a regular Head Start program, those that receive, we come in, we teach them the skills. But then the third piece is looking at a group that we intervene with the young group, but we also have their parents involved. And so we think that is a vital component, because a lot of what we have learned is that parent support, parent encouragement, and enjoyment has promoted the activity for those young children. And a lot of what we see, too, is that children act as almost the catalyst in the home. So they come home with this program and these skills, and they encourage the parents to be active and to engage. And so we're starting to see some change with the parents as well. So
the children are actually getting the parents to get moving.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I have parents come in and say, Mrs. Goodway, since my little boy's been in your program, I've lost 10 pounds. Mm-hmm. And like every night he drags me outside and he makes me kick a milk jug around the backyard. And so it's fabulous. Young children are amazing agents of change at home. And we believe that that's a really underutilized intervention and resource with these parents. And so our new area of research that we're really excited about is we're beginning to develop a program to send home with these little guys to get their parents moving and get themselves moving to reinforce what we're doing at school.
It's incredible to think that this would be one of the effects of having little preschoolers getting active. Did you anticipate that happening?
No. I've been doing this now for about 17 years in three different states, and everywhere I go, the parents come back and say to me, I'm down 15 pounds, or we go outside and we walk the block every night now, and I have so much fun with my child. I come home and I'm stressed, and then my child drags me outside to play catch, and we start giggling, and all my stress goes away. And so that's a piece I think Laura and I are really interested in sort of looking at from a more scientific standpoint.
So they actually wind up having fun as a family because of being introduced to these kinds of activities through Project Skip.
Exactly.
And one of the funniest stories I had was we embed healthy nutrition into our activities. And so We had talked about eating from a happy face bag of groceries, a straight face bag of groceries, and a sad face bag of groceries. And what we would talk the kids about, if it's the big happy face bag of groceries, you need whatever you want, fruits, vegetables, you know, all of your healthy stuff. Sort of straight face bag of groceries are the things where you eat moderate amounts. And the little sad face bag of groceries, you can eat from them, but you just don't want to eat large amounts. And those are our high fat foods. And one parent came back, I was in Flint, Michigan working, and I came back and said, so Mrs. Goodway, I was in the grocery store and Delonde disappeared and came back with a happy face on a brown sack, tossed out all my crap and put in a bunch of vegetables.
Oh.
And I just laughed. I said, great. I'm so excited to hear that.
So this program actually winds up having ripple effects mm-hmm. for the children and the families that are involved. And this is before or after you get the parents involved in the program actively?
The parent piece is new. We haven't started doing that. We're about to embark on a new project in the fall where we're going to pilot some activities we've developed for the families. And so we've been doing some informal things with families, but now we want to study it more scientifically.
We're talking to three OSU researchers about Project Skip, a way to get children into the habit of being active from the time they're in preschool to help head off obesity and to lay the groundwork for a lifetime of staying physically active. If you have a question or a comment, please join our discussion. You can call us at 292-8513 or send us an email at openline@wosu.org. Once again, we were talking about factors that work against this type of motor development. What's happening in those homes or what's lacking in those homes before the children are exposed to Project Skip and that kind of motor activity?
Well, I can definitely speak to that. I think we're seeing parents that have multiple jobs, so we have less structured observation by the parents at home. So they don't oversee activities, and children can then engage in more sedentary activities where they're not moving their body. So we call that more screen time, so more time watching television, movies, playing video games, and it's safer inside in a lot of these places that we've seen. Not only is crime an issue, or safety with them playing by themselves? Safety not being able to cross a busy street if they live near an intersection, but also not having enough spaces or access to a gym, a playground, a backyard. So they have a lot of obstacles that are challenging them.
Maggie, can you talk about how the school environment itself, sometimes is not helpful toward the children's development?
Right. With very young children in child care centers, in a preschool program, we just have a lot of emphasis right now. And it's not a bad emphasis, but it is a large emphasis on academic skill building. And so we tend not to spend as much time with things like motor skill building or even creative skill building in music and the arts and those kinds of things. So because of that focus, if you only have 2.5 hours and you have parents who are very concerned that their children be ready for kindergarten, and those concerns are all around academic skills, then you'll use your time to do that. And so it happens, just with very young children as well in their education settings, that they end up being more sedentary rather than really being up and about the way we would think they would be. But they just don't have as much time to do that. And as they get into elementary school, they're really not getting the recess time and the phys ed class time in a lot of schools that children used to receive. And so even in those structured environments, we're seeing that.
So we've actually weeded that kind of thing out. It's considered extras. That's like the whipped cream on top of the frosting
right.
on top of the cake now, right. as opposed to being part of the meat and potatoes. But it sounds like the three of you would be the people spearheading the movement to say, hey, bring this back. It's all part of a child's development.
Absolutely. I think there's a big focus now in looking at the relationship between getting children moving and academic outcomes. It's a hard area to study because there's a lot of stuff that kind of gets in the way of really trying to figure that out. But there's some great data coming out now that says in schools where kids get recess every day, where they get physical education every day, where they have lots of opportunities to be active, the behavioral problems are significantly reduced, the academic test scores go up, and overall children are healthier and happier and more productive.
So actually when they're acting like the Energizer Bunny, the children are actually doing what they're supposed to do and doing something that's good for them, even though it's wearing us out.
Uh-huh. It's true. Absolutely. It's true.
Okay, let's take a call now. This one is from Paul. Hi, Paul. You're on Open Line. You have a question or a comment about children and activity?
Well, let's put it this way. As a life experience of my own, comparison to what I'm hearing with your show and my own daughter, I remember when she started in kindergarten, they spent a fair amount of time outside playing, but they also spent a fair amount of time sitting in front of a computer. And I know there was a lot of times when I would go to fourth and fifth grade, I would walk and ride my bike to school, which is a mile and a half to 2 miles. My grandmother a lot of times was at home waiting for me, and we had a garden out back of our house. And we didn't think about grocery bags. We thought about what we went out to the garden and picked. And I also had a lot of activity time where I rode my bike. I never sat in front of a computer, never sat in front of a typewriter. And granted, these are natural periods and parts of our evolutionary world today. But I think if you look at those things, you'll find that there's a lot of the problems that we have today. The kids are sitting in front of computers more and playing computer games on television and so forth.
Sure. And while there may be some benefit to the computer experience, they're missing out on a whole wide range of other experiences.
And one of the things that's really happened over the last two or three decades is that lifestyle activity, like Paul's talking about, you know, riding your bike, going out to the garden and digging the garden, mowing the lawn. Kids got involved with those kinds of things, and they had a lot of opportunity to be active. We've weeded that out of their life. And so now the onus has kind of fallen on the child care centers and the schools to try and get that activity back, because a lot of our families just don't have time in their day to be able to put that back. And if you're a poor family, you certainly don't have the financial resources to be able to take your child to Little League or do those kinds of things.
And you may not even have the extra adult to
exactly.
be able to do that, mm-hmm. because if you're a single parent, everything is on your shoulders. And if you're trying to earn a living, it's hard to have that spare time to go and do
Absolutely.
Some of these kinds of things. We're going to have to take a little break now, but when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of keeping children active from the time they're in preschool. You can give us a call and join the conversation at 292-8513 or email openline@wosu.org. We'll be right back after this break. This is Open Line on WOSU 820 Columbus.
On the next Fresh Air, the state of Alaska, now that Governor Palin has decided to resign. We talk with Michael Carey, former editorial page editor and current columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is coming up today at noon on WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Emma Fett in for Amy Jurevich on this beautiful Tuesday. Currently it's 79 degrees and sunny. Expect clear skies and a low of 59 tonight. More beautiful weather tomorrow. Sunny and a high of 81. The nice weather should last through Friday with some added heat. Looks like there might be a few storms though this weekend, so make sure you do get out and enjoy the weather while it's here. Time Team America goes deep into the trenches of America's most intriguing archaeological sites. Tomorrow night, the team goes in search of our nation's mysterious roots at Roanoke Island. In 1586, the first group of hardy, hopeful English colonists came to the New World, but just 3 years later, the settlement was empty and the colonists were gone. The fate of the Roanoke colony remains one of the most chilling and maddening questions of American history. Watch Time Team America this Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WOSU-TV. And now, back to Open Line with Charlene Brown.
Welcome back. We're talking about keeping children in the habit of staying active from the time they're just little guys in preschool, trying to head off obesity and lay the groundwork for them to stay physically active for a lifetime. Our caller, Paul, brought up an interesting point that years ago, there was a lot of opportunity for active play, bike riding. He worked in the garden, was fortunate to have his grandmother at home waiting for him after school. Maggie, how do you incorporate some of those kinds of activities in the school day today?
We still spend most of our time with young children in unstructured kinds of play, play that they're directing. So we establish an environment for them with lots of different materials that they'll be interested and excited about, and then they'll decide what to do with them. And some of those things can be done at home as well. For instance, using big blocks to build with. At home, it can be something as simple as boxes that you collect, cereal boxes and shoe boxes and those kinds of things, which with a little duct tape also make great things to kick. So those are all kinds of things that children can do just on their own. In child care programs, in early education programs, activities like gardening. And if your child care center doesn't have a garden, sometimes as a parent, just to ask, is this something we could do? There are lots of places that are willing to contribute small plants and seeds to get something like that started so that children have the opportunity to engage in it, even if at home there's not really the space or the opportunity to do gardening. So in our child care program, we have a large garden. Families come and help. Children get to harvest, and they make good old-fashioned things like pickles. That's a big favorite because cucumbers grow pretty easily. Making salsa with tomatoes. It's all pretty easy to do. So if you can't do that at home, you can enlist the help of your child's caregivers to see if that's something that you can do together.
And maybe at home you could even do something simple like container gardening.
Absolutely.
Where you just get a pot
uh-huh.
and put a few things in it. In fact, it seems like they're selling more vegetables mm-hmm. now, tomatoes and things that are designed specifically to do container gardening. So
right.
that would be a good one to do with your children too. What other ways, Laura, do you encourage the children and eventually encourage the parents to get involved in physical activity?
Well, that's a that. How long do you have? that's a tough question. I think that engaging. I think one of the most important things that we've learned through research is that the key is enjoyment. So enjoying the activity. So as Maggie said, you know, finding things structured and unstructured activities that they enjoy, because those are the ones that they will continue to do. Year after year, day after day, and the things that the parents can enjoy to do with the child. And those are the things, if you enjoy it, if it's fun, you'll do it again. So I think a lot of people have the perception that physical activity or exercise should be painful, you know, no pain, no gain, where if you're moving your body and it's fun and you're doing something and you're expending some energy and burning some calories, that's the goal. You know, move, get off the couch, even if it's turning on the television and there's music, there's a music channel, or turning off the television and putting on some music, moving your body, moving around in the living room.
And I think Laura brings up a really good point. Part of the fun piece of it is being successful, and that's why in Skip we start with that word successful. And so we give kids lots of options. Some of the activities a little harder, some of the activities a little easier, and they can choose. They're very good at knowing where they're at and being able to select an appropriate activity. Because one of the things we've learned across the years with research is that if I'm successful and I have fun, I'm going to feel good about myself. And I'm going to say, I like to move. This is fun. And I'm going to keep doing it. If I'm not successful, it's not going to be fun. And what we've learned is by about third grade, kids will make a decision. I'm a mover. I like activity or I'm not. And once they've made that decision, it's very hard to change their mind without significant intervention.
Why do they wind up choosing not to move? What is it that makes them not like physical activity?
Well, I think if they've had a series of experiences where the program's not being developmental for them, they've had public failure. Well, you know, one of the things I always say to teachers and I say to principals, if Charlene, if you and I were taking a math test and I got 2 out of 10 and you got 10 out of 10, I wouldn't know. It's private. It's a private thing. But if you and I were kicking a ball and you ran up and kicked it really well and I ran up and tripped over the ball and fell down, it's a public event. And so movement is very public. And if you're not very good at it over time, you just stop doing it. It's not fun. And so we have to get kids the skills. That's the goal of our program, is give kids the skills to feel successful and have fun, and they'll keep doing it.
Is there a difference that you've seen between boys and girls and how they respond to these kinds of things?
Absolutely.
What differences do you see?
Boys are a lot more engaging, energetic. They are more natural. They're more competitive than girls. And so we see a lot of times when you have boys and girls together, the girls have less opportunities to engage in movement or activity.
And you said the boys are natural. I mean, is there really a natural difference between them, or is that how we've socialized them?
Well, I think
that's
how
a lot
we've
of our environment, right? How we've socialized them.
Mm-hmm. I have a great story of we have these little yellow fluff balls that look like little chickens, and they're called fleece balls. And they throw them at targets and stuff like that because they're good indoor activities. And there's a classic this is a classic difference between boys and girls. Boys will get their little fleece balls and they'll look at each other and say, hey, I can throw it harder than you, and like go wham, wham. And they just keep like lots and lots of trials. The little girls will pick up their little fleece balls and go, look, she's called Susie. Look how cute she is. And they interact. And then it will be like, okay, Maggie, you throw first. I'll watch you. Then Maggie throws and I'd say, good job, Maggie. And then she said, now you throw, and she watches me. In the meantime, the boys have had 15 practice trials, and Maggie and I have had maybe 2.
So the boys are just really getting in there, and they're just gung-ho and take over and do it, and the girls tend to be
They're more social. They're much more social, and we need to get both of them to do each of the other. We need the boys to learn to be more social and cooperative, and we need some of the girls to learn to get a little bit more focused and get some more trials in.
And Maggie, how do you handle that in your program?
Well, I think rather it's the kind of innate differences between boys and girls, or rather it's individual differences. Uh-huh. The important thing is that the adults, whether it's parents or teachers, recognize what those differences are and try to construct a program and interactions within the program that help each child to do it in a way that's successful for them. When we think about how children decide to do what they do, they pay attention to parents and teachers, and they pay attention to their peers. So if a parent is sitting at home watching television, when we came in, Barney was playing, for instance, and Barney is very active and there's plenty to do. But if you watch Barney from the couch, it's not helping. But if the adult caregiver says, okay, you know, I can go with this TV thing, this Barney thing, but then gets up and starts doing it, the child is likely to start doing it as well. If for the little girl it requires dressing up like a princess and dancing to get up off the couch, then dress up like a princess and dance. If for the little guy it's, you know, entirely a Power Rangers thing, then, you know, do it as Power Rangers or dinosaurs or whatever it is, because those are the kinds of ways that young children really engage. So I think it's about it's knowing those differences between boys and girls, and it's knowing the differences between individual children as well and how they're going to respond that makes a big difference.
We have an email now that sort of goes to this very topic. It's from Amy, and she says, as a child, and now still, I was terrible at group sports, which made it difficult for me to grow into an active adult. It wasn't until I sought out physical activities that suited me that I was able to be happy and active. Do you have any recommendations for parents who might have less than athletic children that might face a similar problem?
Absolutely. Our physical education programs need to change and are changing. We need to give kids opportunities to choose the kinds of activities that they like to do. And so in this country particularly, there's really an overemphasis on team sports. And children need to be given opportunities to do dance, to bike, to power walk, to do some individual activities, and to give them choices about the kinds of things they like to do. Not everybody wants to play team sports. And so I think, you know, our goal in Skip is to give them the skill set and then to say, wow, look at all these different kinds of things you could do across your lifespan. Let's try a few of them and you figure out the ones you really like to do.
Okay. And Maggie, do you have anything to add to that? Suggestions for parents who are trying to prevent their child from having this terrible experience of being lousy at sports?
Absolutely. I really connected with what Jackie said about kind of the public embarrassment. I was one of those people that was publicly embarrassed every time teams were chosen. I was a tiny person and not very powerful at kickball or dodgeball or any of those kinds of things. So I was often last or one of the last ones to be chosen. And it really made me feel like that was something that I wasn't good at, choosing to be perhaps not a mover. I was blessed with a competitive spirit, so I went a different direction and said, I will conquer this. But I think a lot of people just decide this is something I can't do. So I think it's really important for parents to engage really early on with very young children in just being up and active. It doesn't require a sport or even a specific skill. It requires the choice to walk someplace that's in walking distance rather than getting in the car to do it. It requires the idea of getting on the bike to do something instead of. So it's more a matter of thinking about your life and where can I insert activity where I have none right now. It isn't really about sports.
And I'm curious, what activities did you finally choose that allowed you to be active?
Well, actually, I did some sports in high school, and I still wasn't the best. But I was competitive. Interestingly enough, though, I stopped because, like a lot of adults, you know, if all you've done is sports as an adult, all of a sudden there's really not an outlet for that unless you're very good. If you're where I was, which wasn't in the very good category, there's nowhere to go with that, really. And so you have to really explore and think, what do I like to do? And start to make those lifestyle choices instead of only thinking in these little boxes of volleyball and basketball and golf and those kinds of things. Although I think it's also great for the brain of maturing adults to try to take up something new and different in terms of moving your body. I've chosen martial arts, and that's not for everybody, but it's a wonderful adult activity. It's something that people can do at all different levels. So really looking around and thinking creatively, you know, what new thing is out there to challenge and explore. And I think when an adult does that and their children see, wow, mom or dad tries something new, mom or dad does something that perhaps they're not great at, but they give it a good try, then that's how I can be too.
And Laura, any advice for parents who, okay, they decide they want to get more active along with their child? How do you get past that be the best at sports kind of mentality?
I think it's realizing that any movement is better than no movement. So if you have 15 minutes, if you have 3 10-minute blocks in the evening, you know, after dinner, go for a walk with your family. Some of them might walk, some of them might bike. It's getting out and moving, even if it's dancing for 10 minutes after dinner, going out and gardening, doing activities of daily living. I mean, moving it a little bit is better than nothing. And that's where they've shown to have the greatest health benefits are those that go from no activity to incremental activity.
And I just thought of another one. When my sister and I were really little, my dad would let us help wash the car.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We thought we were really helping. He was basically just getting us out of the way, but it made us do something.
Exactly.
We weren't sitting around. So remember that one, too, if your car's dirty. Here's a call from Braden. Hi, Braden. You're on Open Line.
Hi. I basically wanted to ask you how you define innate, because it's really difficult to define.
As in innate ability to do these kinds of things?
Well, when you say, like, boys and girls are different from birth, I don't know that that's actually true. What I think is they watch people and then they, you know, see what people like them do and then they try to imitate it because they don't have any way to interpret that.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard for them to question that on a deep level because they don't have the capacity to do it. So they kind of just imitate until they find their way through it. And, you know, by the time they have the capacity to do so, they may have been sort of locked into that behavior pattern.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with you. I think particularly young children, they look around and they look who are their important role models. And it's their parents and their older siblings and maybe grandma or grandpa. And so a lot of times it's a socialization that occurs. We definitely have very strong information from research that says boys are better than girls at motor skills. Why that's true, I think, is a lot about modeling and about the kinds of opportunities that boys get and the kinds of feedback they get. And girls get less critical models in their life who are active.
So you would be more likely, do you think, to see a child being active and being good at sports? Say if it's a girl and mom has been on a softball team since forever. If she's there watching mom play softball, then she gets the message that, hey, this is a cool thing for girls to do. So she's more likely to try those kinds of things.
Yes, yes. Because what we found, particularly with younger children, our preschool children, they also tend to be more like the parent of the same sex. So for girls, if dad's really active but mom is really inactive, mom is more likely to have a bigger impact on her than dad. And so if you have an active mother, it's a huge thing in promoting physical activity in the home for young females.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. Braden, thank you for your question. What about the impact of parents who are obese on their children? Does that, in fact, increase their chances of becoming obese themselves, Laura?
Yes. If one parent in the home is obese, the child has, let's just assume they have two parents in the home. If they have one parent, they have a 65% chance of becoming obese, an obese adult. And if there are two parents, they have over an 85% chance of becoming an obese adult.
If both parents are obese.
And so not only are they modeling, they're cooking. You know, a lot of times we see unhealthy eating behaviors. We see less activity. So that combination is what leads to overweight and obesity. So
kind of tied to that, it used to be we would just try and target the child with obesity interventions. But now we realize that the child's embedded in their family, and particularly young children. And so we need to involve the whole family in promoting physical activity and promoting healthy eating. And so more and more you'll see programs that are trying to bring the parents into the kinds of things that they're doing.
You know, back in, the 1980s even, that recently, we didn't have the level of obesity that we have now nationally. What changed in that amount of time?
I would say the biggest change that we saw is that we started seeing a lot of mothers in the family go back to work. And so we see less supervision in the home and more busy, you know, time. Less time. So less time for food preparation, less time to be active. So when they do come home, and I think that we've mentioned this multiple times, that time is one of the biggest barriers in having lack of energy, lack of time. So when you have both parents come home from work and they're tired, it's difficult because there's lots of homework that needs to be done and helped with. And then they have less time to get outside because by the time they get the homework done, it's dark or, you know, they're tired. So they have to prepare dinner, get ready for the next day. So lots of barriers, but I think that's been the biggest change is that we've seen women go back to work.
And the CDC actually has an animated map on their website mm-hmm. that shows the change from 1985 to what, 2000 and
probably 2005 or six.
Six, okay. Mm-hmm. And it changes colors as obesity increases. And the one state where the obesity rate is still below 15%. The only state where that's true is Colorado. What's different about Colorado? Is it that Rocky Mountain air, or do they just do more of the hiking and skiing than the rest of us and keep themselves healthy that way?
I think there are a variety of issues. I think there's a much more of a mindset to get outside on the weekend, get out in the evenings. Although, interestingly, the Colorado data is changing dramatically. In the last couple of years, their data has really it's beginning to look much more like the rest of America. But there is this more of an active lifestyle mindset in Colorado.
Yeah, and a lot more sunshine. I mean, they have...
Oh, that does help.
They have a lot more days. I mean, I think they have over 300 days a year of sunshine. So I think that plays a factor. But I do. I think there's more opportunities. There's more space. There's more structured and unstructured activities for them to engage.
Okay.
And for us in Ohio, I think one of the big problems is our winters. You know, our winters are cold, they're dark outside very early, and we see big seasonal fluctuations in children's weight. They pile on the pounds over the winter because they get a lot less activity in the winter because there's less opportunities.
So that happens to the children as much as it happens to those
yes.
of us who are adults.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not a myth.
No.
Okay. Let's take another call. This one is from David. Hi, David. You're on Open Line.
Hello. I work a lot in the Artists in Schools program, teaching some physical skills like juggling and mime and especially dance. And I found that even though some of these things appear to be very difficult, juggling, for instance, most of the students say, well, I'll never be able to do that. It actually isn't that difficult to learn. It's very susceptible to piecemeal exercises, and the payoff is astounding. I taught a group of special needs kids up in Findlay, Ohio, a couple of years ago, and when those kids learned to juggle, the people on the football team were asking them to teach them. And the self-esteem, I mean, the teacher wrote me back saying, well, their math scores have gone up. What did you do?
Huh.
And, of course, I didn't do anything. I think it was just their confidence. I mean, I had all these theories about left-right brain and juggling and all that, but I think actually it's just their confidence that goes up, and then they figure they can do stuff, and so they practice more, and so they get better. But I did have a comment about dancing. I noticed I go to a lot of these outdoor concerts where there are a lot of wonderful bands playing, and the kids can see, you know, black, white, male, female people performing music, and that's wonderful. But the only people that are dancing are the really small children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we build dance into every day of our program. We always start our session. The children will come into the gym, and we start with music. Music gets children moving. They love to move to music. Doesn't matter what their skill level is. So I agree with you. Dance is a fabulous way to get kids moving.
Yeah. And young children do not have a sense of comparing and judging. So you won't find four-year-olds pointing at each other and saying, you look funny when you're
right.
dancing.
Right.
But as soon as we get into early elementary school, we start looking mm-hmm. around. We start identifying those people who are dancing very well. And we start separating ourselves into categories of people who can dance and people who can't dance. And we really need adults as much as they can, because they can't completely influence peer relationships, unfortunately, but as much as we can to help children realize that moving your body is okay no matter how you do it. And yep,
right.
there will be some people who, you know, are in the NFL, and some people will be prima ballerinas, but everybody can dance.
Okay. I agree fully.
And David, I guess you've seen that in your work.
Very much. But, you know, I would have to say that the difference between what people tend to judge as the good dancers amongst the children and the adults, and the people who judge as the bad dancers, really, to my eye, and I'm a choreographer, is not that they are moving any better. It's that they are not embarrassed about it.
Right.
Or
right.
They're not apologetic about it. If you watch the old Bill Cosby show and watch him bopping across the screen during the credits, and actually look at what he's doing. He's doing the most minimal things you could possibly imagine. It's barely moving. He's walking, but he believes he looks cool. Everyone else believes he looks cool, and so he does look cool.
Yeah.
Whereas if a person did exactly the same movement but felt that they didn't look good and looked embarrassed and looked like they weren't, you know, doing it well, that's really what people pick up on.
Yeah.
Is your attitude toward what you're doing. You can do the craziest dance movements, but if you think, you know, if you're really involved in it and you're doing it, people say, wow, that's great.
And the great thing about four-year-olds is they all think they're cool.
Yeah.
And so it's great. They don't care. They just get out there and move.
David, thanks so much for calling and sharing that with us. And that is a good point. You get very self-conscious as you get older. And I was, as the conversation was going on, I was thinking about teenagers who you could not pry them onto the floor if they feel like they can't dance as well as the really good dancers. What's the point of being out there, because you're just going to be made fun of? And that translates into adulthood, too. You just stop trying.
Yeah, it's interesting because as this epidemic of obesity hit childhood and adolescence, the federal government invested billions of dollars in adolescent physical activity interventions and found very, very minimal effects from them. And part of it, I think, is exactly what you're talking about, is that by adolescence, kids have already said, I'm a mover, I'm not a mover. And you're probably not going to, even if you intervene with me, you're probably not going to convince me I'm a mover if I've had 6 or 7 years of unsuccessful attempts at being physically active. And so that's why I believe we need to start with the little guys, get them successful, make them have fun, make them believe in themselves, and then support them as they go through their lifespan.
Does that change if you don't have that support as you get past preschool? Maybe you've had the benefit of a wonderful program that gets you going. If you don't have that in subsequent years?
We don't know. There's very few of us doing this early childhood motor skill work. And that's one of my big questions is, I think this boost early on will sustain itself across 3 or 4 years. But we also have to have quality physical education programs. And right now in around Columbus, the majority of PE programs, even if they're great programs, they see their kids 30 minutes a week. That's it.
Per week?
Per week.
And it used to be more than that per
day. It used to be 30 minutes a day. I mean,
and a lot of times that doesn't necessarily even mean that they're moving for those 30 minutes.
Wow.
So,
okay. Let me quickly get this email from Chris. Chris says, for many years I've been working on issues related to early childhood education. While it's true that many childcare facilities do not have the resources to do what the guests are recommending, there are some good programs locally. One in particular involves a partnership between Franklin County Board of Developmental Disabilities, Head Start, the YMCA, Columbus Public Schools, and others. They provide childcare for a very diverse population of children. Though more rare, there are those who are doing well in addition to helping improve the system. So it sounds like there's some hope out there, given Project Skip and projects like the one Chris is talking about. Do you feel encouraged by what's going on?
I definitely do, and I think that these kinds of issues are really being heard, that everybody, child care centers, parents, no matter what their situation is, has the ability to do some very simple things to get children up and moving, to encourage them to want to be up and moving and to enjoy it. And I think it's also a philosophy that can pervade everything that we do with children. We need to have the same attitude about art. We need to have the same attitude about math. You could have a panel here of folks who are interested in math and how children learn math, and they'd say many of the same things. Children decide, I'm not good at math, pretty early on as well. So as adults, we have to have a philosophy around everything that's what we're talking about right here, that is, it's not important that you're the best. What's important is that you realize that this is part of life that is enriching to you.
Well, it looks like, Maggie, you just had the last word. We're about out of time now. This has been Open Line. We've been talking to Laura Moad, Maggie Summers and Jackie Goodway, all from the Ohio State University, about their project SKIP, getting young children to be active from an early age. We appreciate you joining us. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD.